This is episode 353 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, October the 10th, 2011. This week's edition of Tech Talk Radio is dedicated to a man whose passion for technology allowed us to have the amazing gadgets we have today. His legacy will be remembered long after that of anyone else in his field. No one else had the drive, enthusiasm, foresight, and determinedness that he had. He was a true perfectionist. Steve Paul Jobs, 1955 to 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So how technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Steve Paul Jobs has been described as many things, but I think the one word that sums up this iconic father of four is visionary. Steve's ride through life has had more ups and downs than probably your life and my life put together. Steve Jobs was born on February the 24th, 1955. He was raised by adoptive parents Paul and Clara in Mountain View, and later in Los Altos, California. As a 13-year-old, William Hewitt offered Steve a summer job at the Hewlett-Packard plant. It was there that he met the man with whom he would invent the first ready-made personal computer, the then 18-year-old college dropout, Steve Wozniak. The rest is history, with some notable achievements along the way. This included his love of animation and subsequent work with the now famous Pixar. In 1986, Jobs bought the Graphics Group, which was later renamed Pixar from Lucasfilm's computer graphics division for the price of $10 million, $5 million of which was given to the company as capital. Steve's movie legacy is Toy Story. Steve was fired from his own company by an employee he personally hired. He then started a company called Next Computers, which Apple bought in 1996 for $429 million. He then set about rebuilding Apple into the business that it is today. Steve's death on October the 4th was not unexpected. Everyone knew about recent health concerns and his fight with cancer, and we all feared the worst when he handed his CEO role to Tim Cook a few weeks back. When it came to technology, Steve was a passionate man. His legacy will live on for generations to come. No one else has the drive, enthusiasm, foresight, and determinedness that he had. He was a true perfectionist and will be sadly missed by those who he touched in his short 56 years, which is nearly everyone on the planet.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we take a look back at the legend and visionary that was Steve Jobs. Contactless phone payments stumble with the iPhone 4GS launch. A telco cuts a woman's internet connection after 42 warnings. HTC user data exposed to web apps, and Microsoft's malware removal tool targets more than you bargain for. First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News.
Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life.
Technology visionary Steve Jobs loses his fight with cancer at age 56. The world responds to Apple's iPhone 4S announcement. A movie rights group seeks downloaded details from Exitel. And for the first time in nearly 100 years, an Australian astrophysicist wins a Nobel Prize for physics. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Apple co-founder and chairman, Mr. Steve Jobs, died on Wednesday last week after a long fight with pancreatic cancer. In 2009, Mr. Jobs had a liver transplant and worked on as Apple's CEO until August this year when he handed the reins to Mr. Tim Cook. Mr. Cook wrote to Apple employees on Wednesday saying, "Apple has lost a visionary and creative genius and the world has lost an amazing human being," adding that Steve leaves behind a company that only he could have built and his spirit will forever be the foundation of Apple. Industry movers and shakers were quick to praise Mr. Jobs, his legacy, and the contributions he made to computing and consumer electronics. Microsoft chairman Mr. Bill Gates said it had been an insanely great honour to have known Steve Jobs and said the world rarely sees someone who has had the profound impact Steve has had, the effects of which will be felt for many generations to come. But his death was not unexpected. Steve Jobs appeared to have remarkable insight into the fragility of life and the importance of living every day to the fullest. Here, Mr. Jobs gives a commencement address at Stanford University on the 12th of June 2005, about a year after he was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
"Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to help me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. You are already naked. There is no reason not to follow your heart."
Mr. Jobs was 56 years old and died peacefully surrounded by his family. Those wishing to leave tributes can do so at apple.com/Steve Jobs. Last week's big iPhone announcement by Apple received a lackluster response from the tech world. Rumours Apple would announce an iPhone 4S model were proved correct after CEO Mr. Tim Cook headed the keynote at the company's Cupertino headquarters on Tuesday. The 4S looks identical to its predecessor, but differs with an 8-megapixel camera, 1080p video recording, a voice recognition system called Siri, a dual-core A5 processor, and two internal antennas. The Siri voice recognition will be trained to understand Australian accents and can be used to ask the 4S to read text messages or set alarms. Apple says its new iPhone 4S will be available in Australia this Friday. The 16GB version will retail for $799, while the 64GB version will retail for $999. Mr. Cook described the 4S as the best iPhone yet, but Apple faces stiff competition from existing Android-powered smartphones with equivalent processor power and hardware features. Apple's share price fell 4% after the announcement of the iPhone 4S on Tuesday. An organisation representing the rights of a movie production company has asked an Australian ISP about details of its customers who have shared or downloaded one of its movies. The thriller movie Kill the Irishman was produced earlier this year and distributed by Anchor Bay Films. Now, ISP Exitel says it's been approached by Movie Rights Group, representing copyright holder Lightning Entertainment, to see if it's possible to hand over the names and addresses of subscribers who it says have unlawfully downloaded or distributed the movie. Exitel's chief executive, Mr. John Linton, said the ISP had not handed over any details, but if Movie Rights Group successfully applied for a court-issued subpoena, Exitel may have to hand over the details if they're available. Mr. Linton told ABC News Online that it was an inquiry of Exitel's legal advisers and went no further than attempting to establish what capability, in terms of data retention of operational records, Exitel might have in place. Film companies have previously focused on Australian ISPs with respect to copyright enforcement. However, the landmark decision in the federal court made against AFACT when AFACT took iiNet to task about the activities of its subscribers, film companies may now be chasing individual downloaders. The Movie Rights Group told Exitel it had a list of 9,000 Australian IP addresses it believed were connected with illegal distribution of Lightning Entertainment's films. And for the first time since 1915, an Australian astrophysicist has won the Nobel Prize for Physics. Professor Brian Schmidt was one of three scientists awarded the prestigious prize for groundbreaking research in the study of supernovae and the expansion of the universe. 44-year-old Professor Schmidt said he was elated to be recognized for his research.
"Well, I feel like when my first child was born, I'm kind of weak in the knees and a little, hard to describe, almost speechless at this point. It's kind of pretty unexpected, and so very big news. And I guess I'm still just trying to get my head around it."
The three were honoured for discovering the acceleration rate of the expansion of the universe and also for the importance of so-called dark energy. Professor Schmidt's work was undertaken at the Australian National University and the Mount Stromlo Observatory, which is west of Canberra. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I feel free.
Do you feel like a load's been lifted from your shoulders?
I've been excommunicated from Facebook.
Now, you've deleted your Facebook account.
No, I decided that I had one too many social networks in my life. And
Andrew, please stop confusing those two issues. Will you please stop confusing those two issues?
When a product or a service is advertised for free, you are the product.
Aren't people being too precious, do you think?
Yeah, in that case, yes.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Instead, it offers the chance to dive into the BBC 70-year archive.
They're late to the party, so it'll be a slow build-up.
I will try to slow it down.
They've got this stupid interactive voice response system.
It does also, I think, depend on which billing system you're in.
It's infuriating. Yeah, but it should be simple.
Local guy didn't have any problems.
Yeah, sure. It's a setting called Live TV Buffer.
Your mobile communications devices are working. People listening to us in far-off lands. What are they talking about? Like Sydney.
Entertaining, informative, and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Don't you shush me.
What? Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the post-jobs edition. Good evening, everyone.
It's good evening, Andrew. I'll say good evening to you, if no one else will.
Yeah, no, that's all right. They haven't turned on yet. They're sitting there. They're still booting up.
Yo, talk amongst yourselves.
Absolutely. We were.
Did anyway. You shush Graham last week? Sounds like
apparently
you did.
Apparently I did in the... yeah, shush.
The promo doesn't lie.
The promo does not lie.
No, it comes back with some home truths.
The promo is all-knowing.
Yes. Anyway, here we are again on a lovely evening, day, whatever you'd like to call it. It's a bit... yes. Anyway, post-jobs.
We're recording this week's edition on a very, very binary day.
It is.
Are we?
It's the 10th of the 11th today.
When we're ones
recording,
and zeros.
Yes, when we're recording this. Tomorrow will be somewhat binary too.
Oh, the 11th.
It'll be the 11th of the 10th of the 11th.
Okay. Graham, quickly, what's that in Roman numerals?
I have no idea.
What is it in decimal?
In decimal, then.
That doesn't make any sense
surely
at all.
Surely there's a binary to Roman numeral translator.
Oh, well, Google has everything.
Oh, that's
it?
What we need, isn't it? Like, you can do a hex to decimal
translation. The amount of times that would come
translation.
In handy.
Yeah, I know.
It should be out there.
I was just thinking that this morning.
Well, they don't even put that on the end of films these days. It's all, they've gone back to hexadecimal stuff. You know, they don't put MMMXCMVII on it anymore. Do they?
They used to put MM when it was 2000, because that was a pretty... easy, simple way just to write 2000 in Roman numerals. I don't know what they do now. I haven't really noticed.
I think the youth of today was a bit lost on them. Not that copyright has anything to do with it these days.
Yeah, the whole copyright message is completely lost on the youth of today. I think you're right. Yes, it is the post-jobs edition, isn't it?
It is.
Very, very sad.
It was a bit inevitable. We all knew that it was coming. We with obviously the handover to Tim at the Cupertino headquarters a couple of weeks back, it was like, oh, here we go. Because Steve, being such a passionate man, he wouldn't have actually, I think, given over such control without seriously thinking about it. So
he was very, very sick for a long time. And I think it was like a few years ago, he was given a life expectancy of just a few months. So he sort of defied all odds. And
well, even that soundbite you played in the news this evening, you know, his mortality was obviously... at the top of his mind.
It was,
which made him...
And that was 2005, that Stanford speech.
Yeah, yeah. And at that time, he was under the impression, or everyone was under the impression, that the nastiness had been removed from his body, but it's come back. So anyway, apparently Steve was laid to rest on Friday with a very personal, family-only affair. There's no state thing happening. There's no tumultuous... funeral service or anything like that.
Nice.
I think even the guys at Apple, I think, are doing something internally, very quietly on the side type sort of thing. But a tribute to Apple too, or should I say congratulations to Apple. They removed all their product marketing on the front page of their website and just put a nice photo up there of Steve, which people could click through onto some nice words, which was on the next page.
Wired.com had a lovely tribute as well with a whole lot of celebrities. They had a nice picture of him. It was all black and white, very tasteful. And they had a whole bunch of celebrity quotes of saying, like Bill Gates had something written there and I think they had Woz and they had...
I haven't seen anything from Woz. What did Woz say? Do you remember?
I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was quite nice. It was just a little thing saying about how he was a visionary and a smart man. And yeah, it was just really, really nicely done. And Pixar had an image up as well. With John Lasseter and Steve Jobs, I think, and someone else.
Pixar being one of the biggest things I think Steve did outside of Apple, in my opinion. His legacy there was the Toy Story movie, which I think was very much ahead of its time. Like most of the products that he developed, you know, we wouldn't have our eye gadgets that we do today without someone like Steve at the helm. Mm. Everyone's got one. I think, Dr. Ron, you've even got an iPod device at home, haven't you?
Yeah. An iPod Touch.
Yeah, I don't know anyone that doesn't have something...
Or hasn't used, at least.
But most households have one of these iGadgets sitting there, whether it be an old iPod or a phone or anything.
Even people who haven't actually got an Apple product like an iPhone or an iPod, they've been affected by the changes that have been brought about in the industry, by the way Jobs gets things done, by that relentless dedication to... design, to producing not just devices that work, but devices that are designed well. And that's flowed on through the rest of the industry. Some people do it better than others, but you know, and it started not even with the handheld gadgets, but back with the iMac. Was the first personal computer that was designed to be something that looked good as well as something that did a good job.
And even if you don't like Apple products, you've benefited from the competition.
Absolutely, yeah.
From them always nibbling on the heels of your preferred brand has made your preferred brand better.
Oh, that's very true. So, we have a lot of good-natured rivalry in here about Apple people and PC people, but at the end of the day, you cannot dispute the fact that Steve Jobs was an absolute visionary. He completely revolutionised the consumer electronics and gadget and personal computer industry and landscape. There's no denying that at all.
And at least at two points in its history, Apple computers would not have existed without him. He founded the company and left it, and then when he came back and basically rescued the company from something that was heading for disaster, heading for the end, and brought it back and put it and created something that's turned the company around into something much bigger than anybody could have expected.
And he was one of the forefathers. He was there when our tech as we know it was born.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Xerox and the Microsoft and the Apple, they were all,
Well, back then it was really only Hewlett-Packard that had sort of got their feet on the ground, and even then not by much in Silicon Valley. And Steve actually, as a 13-year-old, got a job, a weekend job up at HP doing stuff. Yeah. And he met Woz up there. Woz was 18 at the time. They both had one thing in common. They dropped out. Steve was more the marketing man. Woz was more the engineering, the man behind the devices. And, it sort of all went from there. Apple was born. The guys, there's some fantastic literature out there. There's some great biography-type sort of stories and even some people that have written about him as well, the stories that he got up to when he was a young kid. Woz was very much the serious prankster, and Steve was very much the professional. He always pushed things along a little bit. So,
and you can see the way that business mind has developed over the years. Because he's not just a tech geek. He has got that business mind that a lot of people who started out where he started out wouldn't have had.
Well, especially for a college dropout.
Yeah.
He's done very well.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you look at what Woz did for Apple, and that is every time he built a new machine, he wanted it to go twice as fast with half as much componentry in it, so to speak. And initially, Apple started off, I think it was a kit-type-based computer system, which you build up your own stuff and keep going. My very first computer was an Apple IIe. You remember
a lot of people's first computer was an Apple IIe. Yeah.
Well, it wasn't Ron's. I know he had a TRS-80, but mine was an Apple IIe, and I think it turned into a 2 Plus after that. But, a tribute to Jobs, just getting the company to the level that it is today is no mean feat. In fact, I don't know anyone else who could actually possibly do what he's done amidst all the ferocious competition, the patent wars, the negativity against some of his pushes, which at the time, you know, you think, why did he do that? And then, you know, 6 months later, you go, oh, I know why he did that. You know, he was just very much, you know, removing optical drives from devices and things like that. No, we don't need those anymore. Things like that in the later part of his run at Apple, I think was really good. But, I think that the most amazing part of his story, or one of the most amazing parts of the story, was where he hired the marketing guy from Pepsi to come and run Apple with him.
That's right.
And his lines were along, I can't remember the guy from Pepsi's name. Mm. Caught me out on ABC Radio during the course of the week too, but I was telling this story there. Steve said to him, do you want to sell fizzy water or do you want to come and change the world with me?
Sugared water, I think. Yeah. So, do you want to sell sugared water or do you want to change the world?
And obviously, as you would, you'd come along and change the world with someone. And then he...
Only if you believe they really can change the world. And Steve Jobs is one of the few who
absolutely
says that and can do it.
Yep. Anyway, as a result, he was fired because of the way the company was going. So Steve went off and built the next range of computers, as in the company called Next Computers or Next. Apple loved it so much, a few years later, they bought him out. As a result, he ended up being back on the board and, well, got his just revenge, really, didn't he? So I just think that's I don't know anyone else who could, you know, have any form of claim to fame like that. I think that's pretty amazing. Mm. What's your favourite gadget, Lena? You've got a few. Which one's your favourite?
My favourite Apple gadget?
Mm.
Probably my iPhone.
Really?
Yeah. But I'm tempted to say my iPod because that's where it all began for me.
Yeah.
But, probably my iPhone, I think, would be my favourite. Just out of how much I use it and how much I wouldn't want to have any other phone. Mm.
Okay.
Hmm.
I looked at the collection of Apple gadgets that we have at home, and there's a few, three to be precise, and I must admit my favourite's the iPad, without a shadow of a doubt. If I had to give them all up, the one and could keep one, I'd keep the iPad. I just think that was just such a revolutionary piece of equipment. It's the first true tablet computer system that we actually ever had, and to this day, nothing comes close to it. Well, some things are getting close to it, but nothing really comes to the... Yeah, you know, the prowess and the back end and the look and feel of it. Despite the flag.
We've had tablet computers for a long, long time. Going back in the recent history of computers, I used a Toshiba tablet computer a few years ago. But the thing that Apple brought to it was a completely different philosophy to not have it running. You know, the idea that their tablet ran iOS, their iPhone operating system, and not Mac OS, which is their computer operating system. All previous tablets that we'd seen had run Windows or you know, the same operating system that you'd run on your PC. Mm. And this was a complete rethinking, a complete redesign of an idea that did exist before then. And that's typical of the way Apple Computers does things. Though, I mean, the PC existed before the Apple Mac did, but they made it something completely different and with a completely different design philosophy.
Mm. Steve had some great plans for Apple. He still does, or still did, and that is, you know, the new Appleplex, which he's looking to buy a whole suburb of you know, Silicon Valley and around that particular area. And, now it all comes down to Tim Cook and the other people running Apple to make that sort of dream come true for the organ. I'm sure they will.
Well, it's one of the last things that Steve did, wasn't it? He was pitching.
I remember seeing the video at the Cupertino Council meeting where he was showing what they were going to do, wasn't it?
Yep.
So I'm sure that'll all kick in and all that sort of stuff. And I'm sure the company will certainly, you know, keep his philosophies close to their chest when they're doing all this stuff. So,
oh, he's shaped Apple into what it is, and I'm sure he will, yeah, definitely. He'll be steering it, you know, into the future.
What do you reckon? Do you think Tim's going to, like, would it be a foolish man to try and do what Steve did, or would it be more beneficial to actually have new blood and certainly take on Steve's philosophies and his business acumen?
Couldn't just have a Steve Jobs clone. That just, you know,
it wouldn't work, would it?
Is going to have that mix of qualities.
Tim will bring his own individual flair to it, but I think Steve Jobs chose him personally, to succeed him. So he could have chosen anyone in the entire world. If Steve Jobs comes up to you and says, can you do this job for me? You go, okay.
Yep. I think you're the person to do it. I want you to take the reins.
Yep.
Did you see his keynote?
Must have been for
keynote?
A damn good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did you think?
It was good. Yeah. I thought it was good.
Really?
I thought it was respectful. And, yeah, good.
Really, the future lies with the Apple board to remember the history, to remember the things that they've learned from their history, to, you know, the things that went wrong when Apple was on the verge of failure, the things that went right as the new products and new philosophies were introduced, and to be mindful of their history and what got them to where they are, and to carry that forward without Jobs there.
They should be able to keep the company on course, shouldn't they?
Absolutely.
If they're good directors, yes, that's
what
they're for.
Well, apparently Steve sat down with Tim and planned the next 4 years already. So the next 4 years, everything's been already set into motion on what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, but you've got to look further.
We probably won't see a real impact of Steve Jobs not being around for another few years now. Mm.
It's interesting, a lot of people saying that Steve Jobs' greatest strength was his failures.
Mm.
In what he didn't manage to pull, or what he learnt when things didn't quite go as according to plan as what they did.
And
so
he could just pull up his socks and get on with it when he did fail, you know. He wasn't too proud to go back to Apple. Some people would have been too proud once they got fired to go back again.
Well, yeah, mm. yeah.
Some people wouldn't have been able to do that, but he just sucked it up, pulled his socks up and said, yep, I'm coming back. Hi.
He did. He did.
Yeah.
And Apple's always had these products that have not worked, the Apple Lisa, which was just a little bit ahead of its time, and it was the forerunner of the Macintosh, which then was you know, a fantastic thing for the company. And, of course, the Apple Newton, which in many ways could be seen as the forerunner to the iPhone.
That was a little tablet-y.
It was just a decade or two ahead of its time. Mm. That was, yeah. It was a great idea, but it was a decade or two too early.
But picking up on what Graham said there as well, even as, you know, a short time ago was the whole antenna gate fiasco with Apple. They brought out the iPhone 4.
And didn't he take that very personally?
Well, he did. He took it personally, but he's also, like, he would have his head in the sand for a lot of things like that. And, like, Graham was sort of getting to that, I think. You know, you're not holding it right. I mean, come on. If you've made a mistake technologically, then we're still going to respect you and the company and the product. Just fix it, address the problem, and get on with it, move on. But so, yeah, like Graham's saying, you need the board needs to just take the good things. It knows what the good things are. It knows where the company's strengths are, or it should know. Hopefully it's learnt from past mistakes where there have been issues, and it can keep the company headed in the right direction.
Mm.
I've got confidence that they will.
56, very young.
That's too young. That's far too young. Especially, you know, I mean, for anybody, but for somebody that brilliant, it's really, it's devastating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember when I was over in California a year or so back, and Lyd, who's our US correspondent, said, come on, I'll go around and show you Steve's place. And we jumped in the car in Palo Alto and took off around to Waverly Road where it is. And, it's a beautiful house, and it was like everything that Steve did. It stood out from the rest of the houses in the street because that was what Steve was. He was very unique. He had, you know, rather than having the manicured lawns and the beautiful gardening type sort of arrangements, there was no grass at his place. There was a beautiful garden out the back, but there were apple trees out the front and carrots and, you know, sustainable type sort of things.
Well, that's
in his
interesting,
front yard,
isn't it?
Which is just, which was just, you know, it was what he was about, really, in a lot of respects.
So two things stand out there, the dedication to design and being a bit ahead of his time.
Mm.
Because, you know, grass is,
And the Silver Merc was in the driveway, I think, at the time too, which was good.
Oh, there you go.
Not far from, was a short drive from his place to the office. Wasn't too bad. Anyway, yes. Just to remember, sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to move on slightly to the 4S, which was announced during the week as well. It was a big week.
We might do that.
The iPhone 4S.
It was.
iPhone 4S.
We might do that. We'll do some Coro. But before we do that, Steve left us with a few really interesting and pointed remarks. Here's a few of them.
I think one of the things that really separates us from the high primates is that we're tool builders. And I read a study that measured the efficiency of locomotion for various species on the planet. The condor used the least energy to move a kilometer. And humans came in with a rather unimpressive showing about a third of the way down the list. It was not not too proud of a showing for the crown of creation. So that didn't look so good. But then somebody at Scientific American had the insight to test the efficiency of locomotion for a man on a bicycle. And a man on a bicycle, or a human on a bicycle, blew the Condor away, completely off the top of the charts. And that's what a computer is to me. What a computer is to me is it's the most remarkable tool that we've ever come up with. And it's the equivalent of a bicycle for our minds.
It comes down to trying to expose yourself to the best things that humans have done, and then try to bring those things in to what you're doing. I mean, Picasso had a saying, he said, good artists copy, great artists steal. And we have, you know, always been shameless about stealing great ideas. And I think part of what made the Macintosh great was that the people working on it were musicians and poets and artists and zoologists and historians who also happened to be the best computer scientists in the world.
Apple is like a ship with a hole in the bottom, leaking water. And my job is to get the ship pointed in the right direction. I was lucky. I found what I love to do early in life. Woz and I started Apple in my parents' garage when I was 20. We worked hard, and in 10 years, Apple had grown from just the two of us in a garage into a $2 billion company with over 4,000 employees. We just released our finest creation, the Macintosh, a year earlier, and I'd just turned 30. And then I got fired. How can you get fired from a company you started? Well, as Apple grew, we hired someone who I thought was very talented to run the company with me. And for the first year or so, things went well. But then our visions of the future began to diverge, and eventually we had a falling out. When we did, our board of directors sided with him. And so at 30, I was out, and very publicly out. What had been the focus of my entire adult life was gone, and it was devastating. I really didn't know what to do for a few months. I felt that I had let the previous generation of entrepreneurs down, that I had dropped the baton as it was being passed to me. I met with David Packard and Bob Noyce and tried to apologize for screwing up so badly. I was a very public failure, and I even thought about running away from the valley. But something slowly began to dawn on me. I still loved what I did. The turn of events at Apple had not changed that one bit. I'd been rejected, but I was still in love. And so I decided to start over. I didn't see it then, but it turned out that getting fired from Apple was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again, less sure about everything. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life. During the next 5 years, I started a company named Next, another company named Pixar, and fell in love with an amazing woman who would become my wife. Pixar went on to create the world's first computer animated feature film, Toy Story, and is now the most successful animation studio in the world. In a remarkable turn of events, Apple bought Next, and I returned to Apple, and the technology we developed at Next is at the heart of Apple's current renaissance. And Laureen and I have a wonderful family together. I'm pretty sure none of this would have happened if I hadn't been fired from Apple. It was awful tasting medicine, but I guess the patient needed it. Sometimes life's going to hit you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love. And that is as true for work as it is for your lovers. Your work is going to fill a large part of your life. And the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work. And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
friend in me. You got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old pal said. Boy, you've got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. If you got troubles, I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. If we stick together, we can see it through. Cause you've got a friend in me. Yeah, you've got a friend in me. Other folks might be a little bit smarter than I am.
Bigger and stronger too,
baby.
But none of them will ever love you the way I do. It's me and you, boy.
And as the years go by,
our friendship will never die.
You're gonna see it's our destiny. You got a friend in me.
You got a friend in me.
Yeah, you got a friend in me.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say...
That would be a benchmark.
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that.
No.
Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Now, hang on.
Because no. Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And in other news this week, Dr. Ron Coro.
Correspondence this week.
Those who send us mail.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to send us mail, and we welcome it all. We read it all. And we get to most of it on air,
sometimes,
don't we?
Sometimes we even respond to it.
Sometimes we respond.
Yeah.
What?
Sometimes we read it on the radio.
I know. Sounds unlikely, but
if you send
happen.
Too much mail, you can end up in our spam filter.
Carl, via the Tech Talk Radio feedback form, says, "Hi, team." Hi, Carl. "I'll keep this brief so I don't blow a fuse. What Channel 10 did with the AFL Grand Final was another lost opportunity to showcase HDTV." I agree, Carl. Yeah. And we all agree. We agreed with this last week. That's it. Instead of simulcasting the final on Channel 10 and 1HD, they showed amateur golf, followed by the Japanese MotoGP qualifying on their HD channel. That's right, qualifying, not the actual race, which was Sunday. The well-worn excuse of not enough HDTV penetration in the market might have carried some weight in the past, but it's simply nonsense now.
Costs them too much.
I don't think you could find a standard deaf-only TV in any store these days, and with HD set-top boxes now under $50, it's time commercial TV started taking high-definition seriously. 10, he says. Regards, Carl. I'm off for a bit of a lie down.
Not only commercial TV. The ABC needs to take it seriously as well.
And stop running... little mobile phone recorded news clips on its HD channel.
Correct?
Not getting anything out of me. I agree with everybody. Yeah. Everything you've said.
Carl, no argument from any of the panellists here.
Carl, if it makes you any better, I provide content to Channel 10 and we provide it in HD and that's as far as it goes.
You're doing your bit.
I'm doing my bit. We're making it. We're making it HD.
We're doing all we can, Carl. We're giving her all she's got.
Yeah, exactly. We're making it in HD, but it just comes out the other end a little softer and furrier than what we give it to them.
Regular contributor GJMCN via the contact form says, I went into my security suite ZA Extreme.
What's that?
Ooh. I think ZA Zone Alarm. Zone Alarm,
yeah.
Extreme.
You're not a fan?
No.
I'm not a fan either.
No.
Sorry, GJ. It said a new update needs to be installed. But wrong, the Australian reseller, SecureTech, is currently restructuring, in inverted commas, and so their website and phone support are all redirected to the US of A. Expletive deleted. I've got there.
So what happened? He rang him up and he spoke to some person on the other side of the planet who said, we're not here right now, call back later.
They said that his license wasn't recognised, but he could rebuy it if he wanted to.
Oh, that's handy. I'd be rebuying something else.
Now I'm waiting online chat to a new US of A call centre with no accent. So he wasn't very impressed with Zone Alarm. I've never really been impressed with Zone Alarm. It's a firewall-y type program.
I'm not impressed with any of those firewall type programs.
They all bang their own drum, don't they?
Yeah, a lot of them. Yeah. They all... The idea... What Zone Alarm and a lot of these other firewalls do, and every single virus vendor has their... You know, you can buy the antivirus or you can buy the security suite, which has all kinds of other things added on. And one of the things I always add on is some sort of firewall. But what this firewall does is it blocks outbound connections from your computer to the rest of the world, which the only time that's ever going to save you from a virus is if you've already got one. It won't stop a virus attacking your machine. It'll just prevent the virus from doing what it wants to do, or the malware, or whatever it might happen to be.
But at that stage, it's too late.
At that stage, it's already too late. It's a horses bolted situation. Now, the price you pay is that it breaks two-thirds of your other applications that need to talk to the internet.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many times I've had customers, you know, come to me saying, I've got this mystery, I can't get this to work at home, I can't get Skype to work, or I can't make a VPN connection to the office. I'd given them the instructions and they'd gone and set it up. And, you know, you go and uninstall their horrible security suite and it works. It breaks too many legitimate things, doesn't really give you the protection that they say it does. It only protects you against something that's already happened.
Mm.
It's just a waste of money. Don't let the antivirus vendors upsell you to the security suite unless you really need it for some particular reason.
If you're running one of the more modern operating systems too these days, they're not bad what they've got built in. And
well, they've all got firewalls that protect you against inbound connections.
Mm-hmm.
But what Zone Alarm and the Kaspersky Security Suite and the Norton Security Suite and all those ones do is they add a firewall that blocks outbound connections as well.
So if someone lobs something on your machine and it arcs up without you knowing it, Zone Alarm, theoretically, or one of those things will come up.
Something is trying to send 400,000 emails and would you like to block it, please?
Yeah.
But by that time, you've already got the malware on your machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Far better to protect it the other way.
I must admit, I'm a big fan of Microsoft's suite at the moment. It's been really good. It's put it this way, I'm behind firewalls and server protection systems anyway. Mm-hmm. But just from an external point of view, it seems to be doing quite well. And I've thrown things at it, which I know are nasty, and it's picked it up straight away. So it's been very good.
Warlock in our chat room says, Zone Alarm equals POS. Point of sale, I think that
what?
Means.
No,
point not quite.
No?
Primal says, Zone Alarm is the Nokia of antivirus.
Oh, dear.
Which is the new go-to insult, I think, now. Definitely.
Come and join us in the chat room if you're listening live. That's at chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Monday night at 8 o'clock on the internet thingy and on radio in Melbourne.
If that's when you happen to be listening. Mm. Otherwise, you can come to the forum, which is at forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
How's the logins going?
Andrew, you have to ask these awkward questions.
I do.
GJ, I hope that's...
It's read-only.
It's read-only at the moment. No, you can log in if you're a member, but the registrations are turned off at the moment.
Send Dr. Ron an email if you want to join up.
Yeah, that'd be really helpful. Thanks.
He'll put a manual one in for you.
I'll spend all
to his personal email address, which is...
that'd be great. I'll spend all my life reading emails and never get anything done. Now, GJ, I hope that answers your question. That's what everyone thinks of ZA Extreme. And last but not least...
What is POS?
Point of sale.
I'll tell you later.
Thanks.
Cisco on the Tech Talk Radio forum, speaking of forums, says, I'm usually the last one to take interest in a video game commercial.
Ooh, ooh.
But this one was exceptionally well done, in my opinion. He's put a link there to a YouTube clip. If you search in YouTube for Michael, PS3,
yes.
Long Live Play.
Stands fantastic for Palm OS.
Ad.
Tell us about it, Lena.
See, it says in the chat.
It's an ad that it has it's for the PlayStation 3 and Sony, and they've got pretty much every major video game character out there at the moment, all in sort of this tavern type environment, and they're all cheersing to Michael, who, you know, we're all here, and it's all really rousing speeches and everything for Michael, and Michael's the guy with his PlayStation controller, and then there's a big shrine on the roof about Michael. But it's just really well done in the ways that they look and sound exactly like their characters on
it's, it is games. Well done. It's very entertaining. So have a look in the forum if you want to check out the link, or we'll pop a link in the show notes as well. But if you'd like to communicate with us, the address is feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Gee, where does the time go? We're up and running already. It's nearly halfway through.
We should do a 2.5 hour version.
No. Leave that alone. Well and truly alone. That'd be very good. Ah, dear. Anyway, yes, Dr. Ron, I rudely interrupted you earlier on in the piece. You mentioned the words iPhone 4S and all that sort of stuff.
I said, yeah, let's have
And you mentioned it in the news, too.
Let's have a quick chat about that. It was a big week in tech. Sometimes we have slow news weeks, and this last week's been very busy.
It has indeed.
Good news and bad news. And now, good that the 4S has been announced, and there was a lot of speculation about whether there would be an iPhone 5 announced at the Apple events, whether it would be a 4S or both or something. It was just the 4S. Received a very sort of ho-hum response from the industry.
Hum-ho.
Hum-ho. Bit of a lacklustre sort of...
Hang on, let's do a litmus test. Lena, would you get one?
If my contract was running out soon, I would. But I've got another year, so no.
Okay, there we go. There's our litmus test.
But that doesn't mean I'm not impressed by the technology. I think Siri alone is probably a good reason to get one.
Siri, the voice recognition Siri.
I would use that.
Now, Dr. Ron, you said it was being trained to learn Australian.
Australian.
With a Y.
Australian.
What's going on? We've had this on... My lingo works really well on my Android. Is this any different?
Well, there's always the possibility that these types of products are developed in a particular market and they're tested and they work quite well for Americans or for English or for...
It's funny you should mention this.
Whoever.
Says he, pointing a finger in the air, which you can't see on the radio. Mm. But it's funny because sometimes when I get frustrated with my voice recognition stuff on my phone, if I pretend to be an American, it works really well.
Ah, see, there you go. We're still waiting for the Kinect, the Xbox Kinect, to recognise Australian accents. So.
Oh, do you have to speak American to it too,
do you?
Do,
yes. Yeah? Or British. Yeah. Just anything but Australian.
Or British.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
It's a very tricky thing to get speaker-independent voice recognition working properly. You can have speaker-dependent, which works 100% of the time. That's where you train a device to recognise your voice and your particular way of saying things.
Mm-hmm.
But speaker-independent is something altogether different.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to go through a lot of work to actually get it to be reliable with an Australian accent.
Mm.
I'm sure they will, knowing what Apple's like. They'll make a good fist of it, but we'll have to wait and see.
We should go through the list of ins and outs very shortly, but... I might point out that Adam has a view on this from the couch.
I thought he might.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to Adam's view.
So here's this week's View from the Couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
Regardless of your technological allegiances, we should all pay our respects at the loss of the visionary Steve Jobs. Part Henry Ford, part Walt Disney, part P.T. Barnum, Apple's Steve Jobs forever changed the way we see personal technology. It's a shame that Jobs didn't survive to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the iPod later this month, as it's the device that reshaped the personal technology space. Regardless of make or model, practically every consumer electronics device we have today has been in some way, shape or form influenced by the iPod and its descendants, all of which Jobs helped create. It's also a shame that Jobs didn't live to see the launch of the mythical iPhone 5, as I don't feel the incremental iPhone 4S truly does his vision justice. Religious metaphors have always dogged Jobs and the cult of Apple, and they'll continue to do so. Just like Moses, Jobs led his people out of the wilderness but died within sight of the promised land. It seems cruel that a visionary like Jobs didn't live to see his vision fulfilled, although his influence will surely be felt for years to come in Apple products.
Unfortunately for Apple, the loss of Jobs comes as the Android hordes amass at the gates. Considering this, it's disappointing that the iPhone 4S is mostly playing catch-up rather than leading the way. There was a sense of deja vu last week for iPhone fans who woke to the news of an underwhelming incremental upgrade rather than a major redesign. Yep, it was the iPhone 3GS all over again. Faster processor and graphics, a sharper camera, and new voice commands that will be denied to owners of previous iPhones when they update to the new operating system. If you're generally satisfied with the iPhone 4, you're unlikely to ditch it for the 4S, especially if it would involve breaking a contract. iPhone 3GS owners who've held out for 2 years will obviously be keener to upgrade, although perhaps a little disappointed they're not getting the mythical iPhone 5. The biggest difference between the unveiling of the iPhone 3GS and the unveiling of the iPhone 4S is that this time Apple can't afford to be complacent. The launch of the 3GS 2 years ago was into a very different environment. It was before the rise of Android superphones such as the HTC Desire or the Samsung Galaxy S. It was even before the release of Android 2.0 Eclair. Back then, Apple's Jesus phone was in a class of its own, but not anymore. Today, Android is such a significant threat to Apple that Cupertino is relying on lawyers rather than designers to hold off the competition. Meanwhile, even the new Windows Phone 7 is going from strength to strength, with the recent Mango update addressing many of its shortcomings. Only the most delusional Apple fanboy would believe that the iPhone is still untouchable. Now is the time for Apple to forge ahead, to break new ground, not to merely play catch-up in the megahertz and megapixel wars. Now is perhaps the worst time to lose a visionary like Steve Jobs.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Our suspicions are being confirmed in the studio, ladies and gentlemen.
Lena would like to point out that fangirls can be delusional as well.
Exactly.
Oh, dear. So,
fan person is the politically correct term.
A fan person?
You can have a politically correct term for a fanboy.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
All right, so the 4S is out.
I think he's on the money. They're reliant more on lawyers than innovators.
They are these days. They are these days because, yeah, I think we've spoken over the last couple of weeks of the patents that are being snapped up willy-nilly by all these companies so that they can, for no other reason than it would impede the development and the marketing of a competitor's product. So,
and they're on these. The patents are applied to these most incredibly generic sorts of things, like the action of moving your finger across a screen and stuff, and they want to have patent rights to that for the rest of eternity. It's not realistic.
No. Anyway, so what are the other things? We've got 8 megapixels now. Mm-hmm. Megapixels?
Lots of megapixels. 8 megapixels in the camera.
Yeah.
And high definition video. Is it 1080p?
Yeah, video. Progressive.
Now, I think the iPhone 4 was 720, is that right?
I don't know.
Right?
Lena, yes. Do you shoot video with your phone, Lena?
Yes, I do.
Or you just FaceTime it?
No, I shoot video. I rarely use FaceTime.
Yeah?
Very rarely. I never have to chat with people in the same room as me. So that's why. But yes.
Okay, ourselves excluded, so
not
obviously.
Not the most useful of features then, is what you're saying?
Not for me personally, No, but I can see how it would be for some people.
Yeah, and obviously it's got the new processor in it, so things might happen a little faster. Mm. But I guess you got to look at, do you bite the bullet now? And I think, Lena, you're on the money by sitting tight for a bit and waiting for the new one. Even a 3GS user, I reckon, would sit tight. The only reason why, my motivation, and I'm speaking selfishly here, is if a phone died and I had to replace it with something, and go, it looks all right, I'll get it. Yeah. But I wouldn't be going out there and going, get rid of my 3G or my 4 and buying one of the new ones yet.
Yeah,
but that's just me.
More importantly, would you get rid of an Android phone, HTC Desire HD or something, and replace it with an iPhone?
No.
Hmm.
No.
Because they're the people they've got to convert across.
Well, I got the iPhone 3G, and then I got the iPhone 4.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for me to just wait for the 5, I guess.
Yeah, it does. Sit tight.
I didn't get the ones in the middle, so
that's good.
You're happy with the processor speed in your iPhone 4?
I am,
Lena. It's pretty fast. You're happy with the reception in terms of the radio components in the phone?
I'm with Vodafone, so I'm never going to be happy. No, I'm never going to be happy.
Yeah, all right.
It's very funny. I asked Lena to do a test with me, MMS test the other day, and she was, you were spot on the money. She said, yeah, I've sent it. She said, give it half an hour or so. It's Vodafone. And sure enough, it took half an hour, three quarters of an hour before it actually rocked up on, on the network
MMS
to where
is
I was.
Basically
cross
useless.
Network.
I tell everyone to email photos, don't MMS me.
Anyway, it proved a point, so thank you very much for that.
Right.
The iPhone 4 is available October 14 in Australia, which is, if you're listening to us live on Monday,
this
that's
this
a couple of days.
Yep.
If you're listening to us on the satellite, on the CBAA, then it was
yesterday.
You've heard it. It's out. If you're really keen to go and get it, so
I think the Siri is the impressive part.
No, not yesterday. Today, if you're listening on the on one of our other community stations. Yeah.
Now, the other thing too is there's been a lot of banter going on about pricing with the Apple iPhone. Well, you've got to bear in mind too that all the prices you've seen out of the US are on contract, and the ones you've seen here so far have been outright purchases.
Yeah, that does look like there's a lot of disparity there. Yeah. But as Andrew says, there's the pricing in the United States is on plans, and the ones that, the prices that are being advertised in Australia at the moment are outright prices, you're correct. So we start off, what, 16 gigabyte version here is about $799 Australian dollars?
$799 for 16, $899 for 32, and $999
for the 64 gigabyte version.
Yeah.
I think this is the first time we've had a 64 gig one as well. I think it was always 16 and 32.
I think you might be right.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right.
Which is impressive. That's
a
lot of gigs.
That's modern technology for you.
Yeah.
It's the way it's all going. So in Australia, Telstra and Optus have confirmed that they're going to carry the iPhone 4S. And, of course, Vodafone, they didn't reply to people's requests during the course of the week. But it'll front. It always does, because otherwise they'll be left out. And I don't know. Let's see what happens there. But, yeah. So the A5 chip, obviously that's a good selling point. One thing that was interesting, everyone's been talking up this contactless phone payment systems. You know, the RFID, wipe it across gadget. Shall I wind Graham up now? Shall I leave
No.
Okay.
Don't go there. Graham,
don't get the two
cover your ears
confused.
For 30 seconds.
Hey,
I will listen and I'll correct him when he goes wrong. Notice when, not if.
Yes.
Quite confident there.
Anyway, the lack of the rumoured near-field communications capacity or capabilities on the Apple's iPhone is obviously going to delay a lot of the banking people, because they're all really hanging out for this sort of stuff. They've been sort of saying, well, it's here. No, I know PayPal and all those sort of guys are keen to get on board with this sort of technology too. But Australian banks, mobile operators and analysts have speculated that the iPhone 5 will have the embedded near-field communications capacity. And that'll obviously spark a new range of gadgets and things like that that'll come out in banking and e-commerce and stuff like that. So, we're obviously going to – everyone's going to have to sit on the fence a little longer until either Apple comes out with one or a competitor.
And it's going to take the implementation of the near-field communication technology into a device like the iPhone for it to become mainstream, for that adoption to actually take place.
And you've also got to bear in mind that Apple have not said – that it's going to have this technology in the iPhone 5.
No, it's all rumour-mongering.
Everyone's speculating about it and all that sort of stuff. So,
Those doing the speculating came pretty close, though, didn't they?
Yeah.
They said probably a dual-core A5 processor. They'll probably redo the antennas. It'll probably have a better camera, a better video. So they're on the money with most of the improvements.
Yeah. So we won't be able to go to Safeways and get $35 out without signing for it. Oh, look, he looked.
He was just testing, Graham. He was just testing.
Poking the angry bear with a stick. It's not
pay no attention to the man on the other side of the panel. No, but we can't...
Pay no attention to the man on the other side of the panel there who's talking nonsense.
No, we're not going to be able to do that with our phones, just by waving our phone across, which is a bit sad, but I'm sure it will come. Its time will come.
Samsung planned an iPhone 4S block. I read this in IT News. This was quite interesting. But Samsung has indicated its intention to file a preliminary injunction against the launch of the iPhone 4S in Italy and France, in hopes of derailing Apple's new product. And this is the patent tit-for-tat that we keep seeing going on around the place.
Yeah, Samsung's just as responsible as Apple. What is it that they've got taking
the technology that's being used in these devices, they obviously seem to think they have some form of patent over.
People are using their fingers to touch things, so that's infringing our patent.
Yeah.
People are holding things in their hand. That's a patent infringement.
Yeah, look.
Yeah, good.
Yes.
Inhaled just then, and I patented
that.
Yeah,
I know.
And
sorry.
Now I'm going to sue you.
There's only one patent, I think, worldwide that sticks technically, and that's the CSIRO's Wi-Fi patent. They did that back in the 1945 with the war. And, yes, they came clean some...
They developed
it a couple of years
a long time
later,
ago.
Actually, wasn't it?
Because
everyone's using it, that Wi-Fi technology. So, anyway, so, yeah, Samsung are at it again, which will be interesting to see what happens. So, yeah. Anyone got anything else that's... relevant for iPhone-y stuff?
Yeah, the Siri.
We should talk about that.
That's very impressive technology.
Do tell.
Well, I thought it was from the video I saw.
She's lifted it up and now she's putting it down again.
Yeah. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. I thought that was really impressive with being able to order it to do things, but also to tell you, you can tell it to text message someone and what that text message will contain, but also how many meals in a cup, Siri? How many this and, you know, it's just like your little buddy that your little personal assistant that you have with you at all times. And I think that's really cool.
Is it natural speech recognition? Can I say to it like, Siri, send a text message to Lena?
Yes.
I don't have to use specific words. I don't have to say, Siri, text Lena mobile now.
It was very natural. It was very, I don't know, have you watched the video?
To be honest, I haven't.
There's a guy at the start who's running. He's going for a jog and he says, Siri, call my wife, tell her I'll be 10 minutes late or something like that. And text message my wife, tell her I'll be 10 minutes
very,
late.
Very, very difficult to do. I'll be impressed if it can do it.
Mm.
Is it intelligent? Does it have predictive texting?
Well,
does it say dear at the end and sugarcoat it for you so you don't get in trouble?
Yeah. And does it change words on you to completely remove the context of which you wanted to say?
Yeah. And when you say I'm running 10 minutes late, does it know you're always running, like you're always 10 minutes late anyway, it'll change it to 20 minutes.
Yeah, but like this website that we've got, Damn You Autocorrect, we're going to have Damn You Siri.
That'd be a good one to register quickly.
Damn you Siri.com.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, no, I think it seemed really impressive. I liked it. I think if my contract was coming up to changing anytime soon,
Wouldn't sit tight?
No, if my contract was going to end soon.
But maybe just get your corner to crack and go and get a new one.
Yeah, ping.
Yeah. It just happened on my bedside table.
Accidentally dropped it.
That's it.
Now, this is something I didn't know. If this is true, Warlock in the chat room is saying the search comes through Wolfram Alpha for natural language answers.
Mm.
Now, if you've played with Wolfram Alpha on the internets, that's a very impressive site where it does actually take natural language questions and queries and it works out what you want to know and gives you a meaningful answer.
There was one, one of the characters in the ad says, what's the weather like in San Francisco? And she says, oh, balmy, blah, blah, blah degrees. And gives you, the it's going to rain here and there and some locations around it as well. It was really impressive.
Mm.
I know it was an ad, so it's never going to look
bad. There is a 100% chance of weather in San Francisco in the next 24 hours.
That's right.
Correct, Siri.
Well done, Siri.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I think it'll be good.
Well, they'll be obviously listening for keywords and its accuracy. Well, the proof will be in the eating, won't it? The proof in the pudding. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I think it's good for accessibility as well, for maybe our vision impaired technology using friends.
Yeah, not just inquiries, but getting it to do things like, book me a taxi to leave home in 15 minutes, please. Yeah.
Come on. Do you really trust technology to do that for you?
Apple, yes.
Book me a taxi, you'll get something else roll up at your house. It won't be a taxi.
There's one thing Apple can do well, and it's slick things that work.
Hmm.
So they wouldn't put this out if it wasn't.
Seeing's believing. It's just new in the marketplace.
Smooth
we'll check
slick
it out.
And worked.
Yeah.
Warlock's going to get one this week.
I thought he was waiting for Christmas.
He's going to go out and get one on Friday.
Okay. So we'll have to get him on the show and you can tell us all about it, Warlock. Just, don't be quite so passionate.
Try and stop me.
Now, I just want to go back a step.
Yep.
I've just been doing some research while Lena was raving about her voice thing.
Exactly.
The question was asked before about what patents is it that Samsung are upset about in relation to the iPhone 4S.
The send button?
And the two patents that appear to be in question, one is called Apparatus and Method for Stabilizing Terminal Power in a Communication System, whatever that might mean.
Sounds very impressive.
And the other one is a patent called Apparatus and Method for Selecting an Antenna in a Communication System. Which sounds like what we used to call space diversity.
Oh, yeah.
Which has been a concept that's been around in communication systems for, forever. So some goose has taken a patent out on that and Samsung have bought it and they're trying to stop Apple using their fancy system. This is Apple's answer to the antenna problems on the iPhone 4. The iPhone 4S
you got two in them now.
Has a similar system, but it's got two of them and automatically selects the one that's getting the best signal.
So it doesn't matter whether you're left-handed or right-handed now, it's going to work.
That's it.
Yeah.
So, but these are the patents that Samsung are upset about. And if Samsung have a patent on space diversity antennas, then that is just patently ridiculous.
Ha ha ha. I got it.
It is. You know, Graham's right. It's stupidity. It's like saying, oh, that device has got a power button and that's infringing my patent.
But I don't know how they let these patents get registered. Space diversity antennas.
Why do they let these patents become registered in the first place? Who is actually allowing them to do this?
The patent officers that aren't checking.
Well, they need to be taken out and shot at dawn.
They should. Yeah, you're right.
Tech Talk Radio does not encourage the use of violence.
It does against people who work in the patent office.
Yes, that's right.
Except for them.
We actively encourage
them. Well, you stop the incompetent people who work in the patent. You know, if you can find a competent patents officer, then, yeah, we'll defend him. But, yeah, all the rest, yeah,
you need to
line him up against the wall.
Podcast Graham, tip, compressor.
Hang him high.
Okay. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We might take a break after this and we'll let everyone cool down a bit and we'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
I'm surprised that I stand out the front healing lepers.
Trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
It looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
The boot up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
How do you kill it?
Put in the washing machine.
Then Graham replied,
yes.
Doesn't like the way it looks in jeans.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Yes, we're back. This is Tech Talk Radio. We've all calmed down now, had a drink, been outside,
stretched
the fresh
legs.
Coolness of the evening. It was very quick if you're listening to us on the podcast, but nonetheless, we did it. So
it's a bit quicker in real life, but that's okay.
We use portals.
We do use portals. We use portals in post-production.
Have to go there? Yep. Oh, do we? No, we don't. We lose brain cells in
difficult
post-production.
Difficult to say without popping your peas.
It is.
Portal.
Post-production portals.
Portal.
Yeah. Microsoft had a bit of a faux pas during the course of the week. We've got Patch Tuesday coming up. And they've got 23 of the best that Graham's going to tell us all about right now.
He's too busy giving me the greasy eyeball.
That's why I threw to Graham.
Looks could kill.
That was the equivalent of throwing a bucket of water over Graham.
I'd be killed dead.
Throw to him.
Yes.
Patch Tuesday's coming up. Anyway, Microsoft, their little malware tool had a bit of a doozy. You get that every so often. It just like deleting Chrome off people's computers, which was, you know, Microsoft sharing the love with Google, I would have thought. So
I'm going to assume it was an accident because much as they would like to go and remove Chrome off everybody's computer, the negative publicity just wouldn't be worth
it. No. It said Microsoft has moved to fix a bug in its security software that removed rival Google's Chrome browser from users' computers after labelling it malware.
But it wasn't that extensive. My research was like, it wasn't like they hundreds of thousands boat. Or tens of thousands. It was like a few hundred. Yeah. It must have just been a particular...
Maybe they're trying to do people a favour as they try and push people towards IE10.
I don't know.
Windows
particular
8.
Version of, of Chrome or something, a particular build.
A particular
build
combination of...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Correct. The other interesting thing, too, I teased it in the opening of the show, an Australian woman has been cut off from the internet after she received only 42 consecutive emails warning her that her computer was infected. A customer of a small unnamed telco had her machine hijacked by a botnet, rendering a zombie machine. So as a result, the ISP disconnected her from the internet. How many times do you need to be told? Obviously, 43.
Well, no, they shouldn't. They should have taken her off the net. She, by leaving her connected to the internet for that long, they've done the entire rest of the internet a disservice. People who have machines infected with that sort of malware should have their machines taken off the internet.
After three warnings, I reckon.
After one warning. They should just be taken off the internet as soon as you're detected sending this stuff out.
Yeah, but a lot of people don't have the nous. They need to sort of like, I hope I got it. And then they ring up and go, you still got it there.
Is that the way that your average Luddite speaks?
I guess so.
Well, I hope I got it.
Yeah, I've got one in the family. I can verify that.
Gee, I hope that's over.
You've obviously got one in your family too. How is your beloved? Anyway, the woman struggled to remove the notoriously stubborn, malicious fake antivirus program because it had disabled her legitimate antivirus software and prevented her from executing applications. So there you go, Graham. That's why she couldn't do it. But then again, maybe she didn't quite know what to do.
No.
Maybe she needs a license to use the internet now.
Yes.
Maybe. Well, yes. It's not a right, is it? It's a privilege to use the internet thingy.
Yeah. It should be a privilege. Yeah.
Now, because we've been talking about other telephones, HTC, the manufacturer of many Android devices, including the HTC Desire, amongst millions of others. Well, probably not quite millions. Yes. How does your Vlingo work, Graham? You haven't got it working yet?
That's Vlingo doesn't work. Vlingo crashes it.
Oh, does it?
I had to uninstall it.
Okay.
You need Siri for Android.
You do.
Do I?
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. It's a bit like having Flash for the Android, Flash for the iPhone too. Good luck with that too. But anyway, mobile phone.
I got a new ringtone for it after the other day.
Oh no, we no, don't
did
go there.
You?
Nah, yes,
did
I did.
You?
Yes, I did.
Did you get the same one?
Yeah.
Good boy.
Thank you.
Slowly, one by one, Lena, I'm infecting them all.
Lena and I know what we're talking about.
I'm interested in what you're saying.
We know what they got to. Yeah.
He has our ringtone now, Ron.
Oh, does he?
He's if we one all of the
got,
cool kids.
We've all got the
show
portal,
us your ring.
Portal ringtone.
Come
that's cool.
On,
someone are you going to play it?
Well, someone ring me.
Come on, Graham.
Come on, Graham.
Hang on. Well,
while you work on that, I'll just briefly cover this. The mobile phone manufacturer HTC is investigating.
Yay!
There is the one for one. Yeah, good. As I was saying, mobile phone manufacturer HTC has investigated the reported vulnerability that gives away internet-connected app access to users' personal information. Whoops, bit of a faux pas. So if you've got one of those applications, which you probably genuinely downloaded from the App Store, you might find that it's giving away information that you don't really want to do. So the flaw affected several of its Android smartphone models and was discovered and reported by a researcher back on September the 24th. Of instances that it was happening. So, yes, if you're an Android phone, just beware of what you download, I guess, really, doesn't it?
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
I've got some interesting tech news.
No more ringtone?
That does have relevance to games, which normally I'm just talking about games in terms of their software. But now I can actually talk about tech and games together at the same time in the same story.
And that's what we've got time for today. Yeah.
Sports
Get
games.
Get on with it then, Lena.
Sports games, yeah,
exactly.
Specifically the likes of football and soccer games, have always had issues in the past with looking and feeling a little bit unrealistic with how they depict people running across the field and all that.
Oh, yes.
Especially when it comes down to the way they move and the specific skills that each player has. Especially when it's based... He's doing a little jig over in the corner. It's very distracting. When it's based on actual real people, it's hard to get it to look very realistic. Something that might help sports games become more realistic in the future is the new Adidas F50 Adi Zero boot.
That's what I reckon.
Yeah. I knew it was very predictable I was going to say that.
Mm.
This is a boot that has a computer chip in it that can track...
A boot that you wear on your foot.
A real... In real sports, out in the real world, in the fresh air... This cleat boot can track your maximum speed, the number of sprints, and the distance that you're covering with its speed cell technology. They can then use this data, transfer it to a computer or an iPhone, and analyze it to aid in training, which you don't think too much about games in terms of that. You think more the athletes getting the most out of it. But imagine FIFA games, for an example, with the added background information of the strength behind a player's shot, the technique they use to make it, and where the ball hit their foot and all that sort of stuff for getting real accurate depictions of the professional footballers that they're depicting. But then, think about it this way, if you will. Andrew's not.
I am.
Graham
I'm
might.
Listening.
Ron will.
I'm pushing buttons over
as
here.
Well as making it more realistic to depict the professional players, you could actually make gamers who are wearing their actual shoe to play soccer in their own amateur clubs or school teams or whatever, you could then use that to level up in the game. Does this make sense?
Oh,
yeah,
yeah,
see?
Okay,
this
yeah,
is where
yeah,
your
yeah.
mind can be blown a little bit.
Yeah,
this is where I get really excited.
Yep.
Because
Hang
you can level up due to how much you ran around during last weekend's match, or there being in-game incentives to improve your real-life soccer skills.
So if I've been using this device and I've spent 8 hours on the weekend training, practicing...
In your boots.
In my
normally,
boots,
yeah,
playing online, doing whatever it is I'm doing...
Hmm.
Then I've got more experience.
Yeah, you could level up your in-game character by going and playing soccer on the weekend with your real-life mates.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
And it can track the data that it's logging from your feet and use that to create a very accurate avatar of you as a soccer player.
I have a mental picture here of a Formula One pit crew sitting in the pit lane of the football field, watching someone play football with one of these shoes on.
And they come running
and
in.
Doing tweaks as they go. Oh, we'll have a bit more richness in the mixture, you know. We'll put a few more volts on his toe. Ouch. We're
gonna
kick faster.
Yeah. Going to change the laces or...
But don't you think that's a really cool use of technology?
It's a good use of technology.
Yeah.
Couldn't this cross over
into games.
Couldn't this work the other way? Couldn't you have the sensors in your foot and you could have them in their backyard with a net and their soccer ball and running around and have the other 11 players in 11 other backyards in 11 other places and have them play a virtual soccer game?
Exactly. It's really, really exciting.
You could always just get together and play soccer.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be better.
Someone always says that.
Yeah.
Going outside.
The round ball. Love it.
If you're into Dungeons and Dragons, you could wear Boots of Escaping. You could have the technology.
I'm wearing Boots of Escaping. Wearing Boots of Escaping.
He was gone. I just thought that was really cool. I really
like
the idea
I like that use of technology.
Using sort of the real world in a game as well and having the two...
We could try that with driving
line
cars too.
Them blurring.
And encouraging the little
GT5 on Victorian roads. Hang on a minute.
Maybe not.
There's similarities already. We won't go there.
What were you going to say, Graham? Sorry.
I was going to say, it's good if anything that encourages gamer kids from getting out of the lounge room and off the couch to out and actually kicking a real ball with a real foot.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely to be encouraged.
And incentivizing it a little bit.
Said the fat guy at the end of the panel.
Oh, no. But, you know, especially growing up as an only child, there wasn't that much sports I could go out and, you know, I couldn't go out and kick a ball with my brother or my sister. So this kind of thing would be really cool if I had a net and a soccer ball and then went inside and immediately could level up because of what I was doing out the back.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah.
You deserve a slight advantage in this game because...
Because
of this work you've put in.
Your precision has become improved and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, I just thought that was really neat. Also, do you remember us talking about Team Bondi a little while ago? They were the developers behind L.A. Noire.
Yeah, yes. And they had problems.
They did. They had big problems with shutting down, and we've just found out that...
they had receivers appointed, basically.
Yes, they did.
Was this the mob that were very not very nice to their staff?
The boss was a little bit of a tyrant, Brendan McNamara. Everyone knows. Everyone knows.
Parliamentary privilege.
No.
The boss was reported by...
Yes,
widely
allegedly
to have been,
was a tyrant.
Yes.
Team Bondi, $1.4 million in debt. Documents were filed through the Australian Securities and Investments Commission that state Team Bondi owes a total of $1.4 million Australian dollars to its creditors. These creditors, include more than 30 of the employees from Team Bondi.
Yep. So the employees are creditors because they haven't been paid.
Yes.
Yep.
Who are owed values ranging from $19,000 to over $100,000 each.
Yep.
Among them are Team Bondi boss Brendan McNamara, owed the highest amount listed to a single person, which was $102,000.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, there's also companies listed there, including Depth Analysis, the firm that created the motion scan technology, which was what caught the facial animations.
That's what they used to capture the animations that you see in the game, the facial animations you see in the game.
Which some people would say was L.A. Noire's party piece, sort of what it was famous for. So that company's owed $145,000, apparently. Which is a lot of money.
You quite enjoyed L.A. Noire, but you went off it a bit.
I did. It sort of fizzled out towards the end, I feel.
You thought it could have been better.
Yeah, it could have been better. But despite these issues, a PC version of the chart-topping game is expected to be released next month. Yeah, so it's gloomy, but they didn't forget the PC version, which is good.
I've got some exciting game news.
You do?
I did something for the first time.
What?
Last night.
What?
Played Portal 2.
Ooh.
Two-player cooperative modes.
Ah.
Split screen.
Oh, excellent. Fantastic.
That's my exciting game news for the week. It was very, very good, and it was on a PS3.
Ah,
never
good.
Played on a PS3 before either. I've always played at Portal 2 on
How did you get it on
computer.
Your PS3?
I went to a friend's place, and he had bought the disc.
Oh, is that the only way you can get it on a PS3?
He ordered it, and he got it shipped to him. So we were playing it on the PS3, and it went really, really well. It was great.
Oh, good. I've not played it on a console before. I can't imagine first-person perspectives on consoles.
What's the sound like? It would have been good sound, I would imagine.
It was great. And he had it in the nice big telly.
Big surround sound?
Yeah.
Lena doesn't play in surround sound.
No, but that's okay.
No, I don't.
No.
The gameplay was really, really good using the PS3 controller.
She likes thin audio coming out of her phone.
She does. I was used to using the keyboard on the computer for moving forwards and backwards and left and right.
Oh, yeah, so you're using the mouse, joysticky thing on the PS3.
Mouse looking at, you know, where you're actually, you're aiming or you're looking. This is using the PS3 controller. And, yeah, I got used to it very, very quickly. It was good.
Just the analog sticks instead
Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun, and you really do have to cooperate. There is no way you can finish a level without talking to the other person, saying, all right, you have to go and stand on that switch there while I do this. I'll shoot these portals for you, and then you have to shoot them for me, and then we can get through. We were progressing through the levels quite fast, but it was a lot of fun.
Oh, good.
It was good fun cooperative mode.
Yeah. I played a little bit of it at the Manor Bar on the controller. Obviously, they're not going to have PCs all set up in there because that's not as social. But, it is fun. You definitely have to talk.
You do. You definitely have to talk. Yeah. And the good thing I liked is you can say, if you can see the solution to something or you want to draw the other player's attention to a particular part of the level, you've got the ability to, like, flag a particular part on the screen. Like, I don't know, quite know how to describe it. You can put it like a little target or crosshairs.
Tag it.
You can tag it. You can tag an area. You can say, look, this is where I'm looking at. Up here, this is where you need to shoot the portal. Mm. And that little tag will appear in the other player's window so you know what they're talking about. Oh, there, is that what you're talking about? Oh, yeah, okay, no worries, I can shoot.
Sort of point to it.
Yeah.
It Lena, really in the chat, Cisco, who I think is on the other side of the planet, he's in America, said, Lena, probably a bit before your time. Oh, sorry, it refreshed. Oh, here we go. But did you ever play any of the original Rainbow Six games?
No, can't say I did. Eh? Not that I remember. I played a lot of games as a kid, but I never remember their names. That's the bad part. I'd know it if it was sitting in front of me, probably. But, yeah.
Did you ever used to play arcade games when you were... No, it's probably...
I went to Time Zone and all that as a kid.
Yeah.
Growing up, yeah. But they were
Did you ever play some of the old vintage games there? You know, like the Tron games? The Space Invaders, the Asteroids?
Galaga. However people want to... There's a million different ways to pronounce that.
I remember when they were 20 cents a game. Yeah. What are they now? $2 or something like that, aren't they?
At the local fish and chip shop, there was always an arcade thing, wasn't there?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, now there's not.
No. Well, there's actually an old arcade machine at the Manor Bar in Melbourne that they've called the Winnertron, and they've put a whole bunch of indie games on there.
Really?
Yeah, so you can play... You can support your local indie dev community and go and play a few games on there. It's really cool.
Because I went into an arcade recently with my younger ones because that's what they do when you go to the movies.
Yep.
And I didn't recognise any of the games there. There were a couple of old pinball machines and stuff like that, but that was really the end of it. There was...
Yeah.
I think video
arcades
games...
Arcades are still quite big in Japan and a few other countries. Not so much here, but yeah, they're still very big in a lot of places.
Yeah, they're into these jumpy things these days. You know, like they play
Dance,
music
Dance and... Revolution and all those sorts of ones where you get up and move around.
Which I guess is pretty good in a lot of respects. Keeps the younger people moving.
Indeed.
Cisco in our chat room says, Lena, probably a bit before your time.
Ron's on delay.
He is a bit.
He's working
on... Is that what he was talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah,
Ron's on chat delay. You're really going to do the heads in the chat now, aren't you?
Now, you need to pick up the conversation again. That'll confuse everybody.
Oh, no.
He's just said it was one of the first-person shooter games that made the player think before they pulled the trigger.
Interesting. So if something moves, you don't just shoot it?
No. Yeah, you had to be discerning.
Okay. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Lena Van Deventer, and Graham. The Rob Oakeshott of Tech Talk Radio is in this evening, sitting back in the old granddad chair there.
dear. Cisco in our chat room says, Lena, probably a bit before your...
Sorry.
He needs a rest.
Back to the TARDIS, Doctor.
Back to the TARDIS for me.
In other news this week, we all know that Hewlett-Packard is getting out of PC manufacturing in the global market. And a personal computing market without HP is more likely to drive up component prices. This has basically come from Dell, the people who make the Dell computers. Graham, do you reckon that's a valid point? Is HP or was HP such a stalwart in global computing hardware that with them out of the game, we're going to start seeing prices go up a little bit in components?
I don't know. It sounds a little bit iffy to me because, if that's fair enough, HP were a big, big player and sold a lot of PCs. But people are still going to need a lot of PCs. And just because they don't buy them from HP doesn't mean they're not going to buy them from somewhere else. You're still going to need the same number of CPU chips and the same number of graphics cards and the same number of whatever. I can't see that it's going the absence of HP from the market is going to reduce the market that much. Does anyone else?
I don't know.
Have an opinion on that? No, very quiet on it.
Never had an opinion in my life.
No.
No.
You should get out more often. Speaking of getting out more often, there was a text I got from you on the weekend.
Me?
I'm still trying to decipher it. Ron, can you read the bottom text on my screen there? And do you think you could translate it into something that the listeners could actually, and even me could actually comprehend?
I don't even remember sending that. That's oh no.
It says,
no. Try it. Just you contemplate it before you read it because he's thinking about.
Do you want me to translate it or read what it says?
Well, both, if you can.
It says,
not, shall we?
A translation, I think, is.
I won't be able to come into the radio.
Don't think.
Because I can't type.
Don't think I'll come to radio tonight. I'm sorry. Would love to something come. I'm not sure. What it actually says is Dong Mumt Think O C M Fardio with two eyes tonight. Sorry, would love to brain.
I would love to brain, but I can't, evidently. Yes. Oh,
I'll take a screen grab of that and pop that up onto the website.
No,
for
let's not, shall we?
Damn you, autocorrect.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was not user error. That was my phone.
Maybe we can have a competition, see who can translate it. We'll run it through Siri.
Did you really send that to Andrew? Is he making this up?
I hope he's making it up.
Quick, grab her iPhone and make sure. You'll see it in the sent items.
I might be able to marry up the sent items with what you're looking at.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Unless she's deleting everything now. Yeah.
There are disadvantages to being always connected.
There are, isn't there? Anyway, that was very funny. I saw that come in and I've looked at it and I looked at it again and I looked at it again after that. And then I turned it off and put it back on the table. I said, oh, well, we'll try and decipher that on Monday night.
Now, Warlock, you can't say that in the chat.
Oh, no, it's on mine as well. It's on my phone as well.
Oh, it is. So it did originate from Lena's phone.
We have corroborative evidence.
Oh, dear. That was only at 8 o'clock as well. Oh, dear.
Anyway, some of us were having a good time on Saturday night, weren't we?
Some of us were.
What was the brain thing?
I don't know. That was autocorrect because it's capitalized. Yeah. Warlock on the chat saying, blame Siri.
Yeah.
Damn Siri.
On iPhone 4, yep.
Lena had a prototype 4S and it's just...
She found it in a bar somewhere.
Let the cat out of the bag now.
Beta Siri.
Yeah.
Did you see the funny YouTube clip that somebody made of...
Yes. GLaDOS.
GLaDOS. So it was GLaDSirios or something it was called.
It's GLaDOS from Portal doing the responses for Siri, which is saying things. She says, how many tablespoons in a cup or something. And she says, like, you need to know, you're looking a bit tubby, you could do without the cupcakes or something like that. She's being really mean as the response. It was very good, very in character as well.
It was very in character. It's quite funny. I think that's on YouTube.
I can't do a frame grab because her phone number's there.
That's a bummer, isn't it? Please don't put my phone number on the internet.
No, I won't. Sorry. I was just looking at that.
Ever again.
Yeah.
Look at the situation she's in now.
Yeah, you'll have to change carrier and...
She's run out of carriers. No one else will have her.
Yeah. Oh, is that what it's come to, is it?
I'm on a blacklist.
Remember, she's on the Telstra blacklist.
That's right. She is too. How's your Bob going, by the way?
Awfully.
Oh, good. Mm. Okay. Moving right along.
Now I'm on the iiNet one as well.
Speaking of Bob, iiNet trial heads to the High Court for December. You remember all the shenanigans that's been going on for what seems like years now over the...
AFAC versus iiNet.
That's the one you're talking about.
From the federal court, now going to the High Court.
Yep. So this is it. They can't go any higher than this. They've taken it as far as they can go. And iiNet
and AFAC have lost at every stage.
Yeah, I think they're now just trying to recoup a bit of their legal costs, aren't they? I think that's their motivation, but we'll soon find out. But iiNet's going to head to the High Court in December for the latest round of hearings in its long-running copyright battle. With the film industry, the High Court of Australia has set aside December 1 and 2 to hear the appeal by AFACT, the people Graeme just mentioned, and we'll see what happens from there. So maybe they're trying to claw a little bit of respect back. Now, Ron, I was going to ask you briefly in the news, Exatel this evening are actually asking ISPs for addresses, is that right, of people that have downloaded a certain film? What chance have they got of that, do you reckon?
No, we'll go back. There is an organisation calling themselves Movie Rights Group. They approached Exatel. At the time that I wrote the news and recorded the news, it was only Exatel, but a short time after, other internet service providers came forward and said they had also been contacted by this mob purporting to be the Movie Rights Group. And they were saying, if you received a subpoena or a court order, would you be in a position to divulge this sort of information? Is this the sort of information that you keep?
Oh, here we go again.
Yeah, and Exatel said, well, we don't know who you are and why you're asking this question, so we're not going to answer.
Have you heard of them?
Go away. No, I haven't heard of them, no. But they said they were representing the rights to a movie called Kill the Irishman, which was produced by a company called Anchor Bay Films. The speculation is that this mob is having, you know, had AFACT and IINet go all the way to the federal court, now the higher court, and potentially, you know, AFACT, you know, will lose this at the high court as well, that the copyright or the rights holders are now going to be going after individual downloaders. Now, my response to that is, well, good luck.
Yeah.
I think you've got two chances of getting up, you know, with civil action against individual downloaders.
In one way, it's the correct approach. Instead of going after the middleman, you're going after the actual person who's... and generally, it's not the downloader that's committed the greater offence, it's the uploader.
No, well, they're both. Think? No, because they're both sharing. They're both equally.
Can't they ping you for loss of income? And if you upload it to X number of people, and they can prove it, and that's going to be the hard part. Who did you upload it to?
But Bob, under Australian law, I think that's the that's all they can go for is if you've in total uploaded, you've downloaded the whole thing, and your upload ratio is 2.5, and you can only be done for 2.5 the value of what you could have bought it for.
Yeah. Yeah, $29.95 by 2.5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when in America, where the lawyers have taken the same approach and ended up going after end users, they've ended up suffering much, much more bad publicity than they've achieved in returns, because they end up going after little old ladies who someone's grandson has downloaded a movie. Mm. And
the little old lady being the account holder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the little old lady ends up in court when trying to defend these...
multi-million-dollar lawsuit. You know, you're going to go to jail for 48 years, or you're going to have to pay us, you know, $8 billion or...
So the negative publicity in general has gone against them.
But the law in Australia is very different to the law in the United States.
Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. From our point of view, I think that... I was talking to a friend just the other day about this, who is a legal person. He's got a very good knowledge of such things in terms of corporate law. And, it compared with what is going on in America, I don't think there's any chance of anything like this happening in Australia. There are just so many what-ifs and buts and maybes, and there is no case law surrounding any of this. It's so untested and unknown, and there are so many grey areas and ambiguities that I don't think that anyone would be successful at all.
Isn't the onus on the people who call the action to prove it?
Absolutely it is,
And how are they going to do that?
Well, that's just it. No, nobody knows, and that's the thing. There is no case law. It's never been done before.
So this is just bully boy tactics where, okay, Dr. Ron, you downloaded a film. I'm going to send you an email with an invoice for $29.95. If you don't pay it, what am I going to do? Look, it's like those parking places where...
What they might do is target, for example, people at... download a movie and then burn 5,000 copies of it and go and sell it at a Trash and Treasure or Caribbean Gardens type market, you know, a Trash and Treasure market. But even then, that's what they're doing is an offence against criminal law, those people, and they should be targeted by the police because they're breaking criminal law. This sort of action that we're hearing about, this movie rights group in Exitel, that would all be civil action that the rights holders would be taking against the people who they allege are infringing their rights.
Mm.
It's very, very grey, very blurry. I don't think there's anything for anyone to worry about.
Well, the one good thing about IINet going all the way up to the High Court means that this will be done and dusted by the end of the year, and everybody will know where we stand, won't they?
But that case is a different case. That's the rights holders.
That's the safe harbour.
Going after the ISP, going after the middleman. So what this new one is talking about is... the rights holders going after the end user, not after the ISP.
Yep.
Okay, so it is a different branch of the story.
But I think we've covered both ends of the spectrum here with Ron, what he's been
now,
saying.
Now, going after the middleman is clearly crazy. It clearly makes no sense.
Correct.
That would be like trying to sue Telstra because somebody made a threatening phone call to someone else.
Or Vic Roads because someone sped in did 70 in a 60 zone.
Yeah, so it's complete nonsense. But going after the end user, yes, in one sense it's the correct thing to do. But
in a sense, it's the correct thing to do because they're the ones that
have actually committed the offence.
Right,
they have
right.
actually
or infringed the rights,
downloaded or uploaded something that they don't have rights to.
Yep.
But yeah.
But how would you prove it in a court
that's
of law?
The thing, isn't
well,
it?
You could prove it. You could say well. If you could prove, the question that they're asking in their letter is basically, do you keep records of who had what IP address at what time?
Maybe they're phishing.
And then if the ISPs are keeping those records, then they can subpoena them to bring them to court, and then they can say, well, look, here's the records of what I did on my computer. I connected to that user, and they were allowing an upload of this movie.
Hmm.
And I downloaded, you know, chunk 487 of that movie from
them. But no one's going to have that amount of detail, not unless someone comes in and nicks your machine or whoever the offending machine is.
No, the movie rights holder does a search on the internet, finds a BitTorrent of their movie, and then goes and sees, tries to download it themselves.
Yeah, looks at the IP address.
And sees, yeah, and sees all the IP addresses of the people they're downloading from, and they're the people that they can go after.
Yeah.
And that's quite straightforward, assuming they can then link that IP address to a particular person, which is what the question to the ISP was. That whole process is quite clear and quite straightforward.
Oh, yes.
The question is, how much are they going to get back for it, for the effort they're putting in?
Well, that's the monetary gain, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
They
and
have
how
to
much
take
bad
lot-
publicity are they going to have to cop along the way?
Yeah, it's going to take a lot more to send invoices out for $29.95, isn't it?
And what they need to do is have a look at what happened to the music industry. We started off with Napster and then a few other things that were allowing illegal downloads. And then Apple and iTunes came along, and suddenly it was simpler to buy the track for 99 cents than it was to pirate it.
You can't imagine that an organisation like Movie Rights Group would be trying to recoup costs for lost sales. All you can imagine that they would be trying to be doing is making an example out of people and saying, look, you've distributed this movie 100 times, so we're not going to go through this whole process just for trying to get, you know, $29.95 times 100 out of you.
But
we're going to go through
this
process because we prove we can do it.
Yeah.
And the technology's on our side, the law is on our side, and we want to make an example out of this person or these people for whatever reason, so that people are aware that this is wrong. That's the only reason I can think of that,
okay,
why they would be pursuing
this. I'll buy that.
There's another reason in that if a company doesn't defend its copyright, if you have a copyright work and people are copying it and you ignore it, then there is case law to say that you lose your copyright over that law.
Mm.
You've got to actively defend your rights to be considered to be able to keep those rights. So that would be another reason they're doing it.
Mm.
Very good. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're getting very close to the end of yet another show for the year. Just briefly, Amazon, those people in the States that are selling tablets, they're currently losing $10 on each tablet that they're selling. That's a good business model, isn't it? So, yeah.
Depends.
It might work for other people.
Yeah, absolutely. It might be a good business model. Oh, okay. You don't know what it is they're doing behind the scenes.
That's right. What's the aim?
Now, Google is...
Lies, damn lies, and accountancy.
Correct. Google's...
Yeah, you see, just to give you an example, they do that all the time. You sell printers at a loss in order to sell the ink cartridges later.
I don't buy ink cartridges anymore. I just update my printer. They're cheaper.
You just download them.
You get three print cartridges. You get three or four or five or six print cartridges sort of full in the printer when you buy a new one for $49.95.
They're only half the capacity of the ones you buy.
Yeah, there's always a reason. But it's still cheaper to buy a new printer than it is to buy three full
Sometimes
print cartridges,
is, yeah,
unless you go the aftermarket ones. Google are opening a London Chromebook retail store. Wish I could speak tonight.
Just a mad minute.
Yeah. Well, actually, we're running over now. So, but just briefly, I thought that was interesting that Google's opening its Chrome Zone.
That's right. Google's opening a Google store
in London on Friday. So,
like
who's in London on the chat? Anyone? He's not there tonight, is he?
It's an Apple store for G heads.
An Apple?
Not I heads.
A G Google store.
Yeah.
You said Apple store.
Yeah, it's an Apple. It's the Google version
the
of an
equivalent,
Apple store.
Yeah. So. Anyway,
just in the UK though.
Just in the UK at this stage.
I saw a Sony one the other day.
In the UK,
no,
what, a Sony store.
Sony shop.
Where have you been?
That was in Nunawading.
There's one in Chapel Street. There's one in Nunawading. They're all over the place.
Yeah, that's the first one I'd ever seen.
Oh God, Lena, you should get out more often rather than send texts like you have tonight. The odd spot, the gadget, and the website of the week, and deciphering Lena's text is after this.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
You should have seen the odd spot that Andrew sent me. That's with tone raised.
Sorry, Adelaide. Sorry, Brisbane. Sorry, Canberra.
Sorry, Darwin.
Oh, we'll get there in the end.
A question for Lena, gamer and mum.
Hey, that's me.
It's no good writing an agreement that's only enforceable in 1850.
Java, my friend. Java.
Yeah.
Could be Java.
Yeah.
Have you got a spare Google Plus invite? Yeah, it's in the mail.
Yay,
First Nerd Alert.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Lena is wearing this week's gadget.
Oh, really?
I had to make it the gadget, Lena, yay, because you didn't tell
you
had, us...
You brought your stop button back.
You didn't tell us how clever this thing actually was. Lena is wearing the eye necklace. It's an open source wearable electronic pendant. Now, I thought the eye necklace that Lena is wearing that she had on a couple of weeks ago was just something that you actually put a battery in and the light glowed. But it's a much, much, much more than that.
Is it?
You ask?
Is
absolutely.
It? Mike, is it?
It works for straight-up Apple fangirls and also guys, and also for people who want to get down and dirty with technology. For the former, the pendant's ready to go right out of the box, and it's got the pulse, and it flashes, and it's all reverse-engineered from the Apple breathing LED pattern, as you know. For the latter, for the people who like to get their hands dirty, the pendant's LED flashes and how it works, it's all completely open source, and the source code and the circuit board files, the schematics and the CAD files, the computer-aided design files, are all open source and they're posted on GitHub. So you can see how the thing works. You can write for the pendant. You can get into it. You can change how it flashes and do stuff like that.
Awesome. I could do like Morse code, a message
you
Morse
can.
Code.
That's exactly what you can do. Cool. The pendant's machined.
Be careful these boys know what Morse code is in here.
From 6-series aluminium. Each eye necklace contains a circuit board with the pulsating LED and two CR1220 batteries. The pendant is on an 18-inch sterling silver 1.6mm diamond cut curb chain. Lena, cover your ears now if you don't want to know the price, because you got it as a gift.
It was a gift, yes.
$74.99 from thinkgeek.com. That's our gadget, Andrew, the eye necklace.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Very simple website this week, and I thought it was appropriate given what we spoke about at the start of the program. apple.com/Steve Jobs. If you'd like to share your thoughts or your memories, condolences, you visit the website and there's an email link there. But Apple has done a good job there,
It was a very nice thing that they did, actually. Yeah, it was...
A nice gesture, let me speak in English, and tastefully done. So that's a very brief mention of the website, Andrew, but that's for this week.
You haven't got the little inscription that was down the bottom of it, have you? Because that was also very, very...
Graham has it in front of him, and he'll read it for us now.
Apple has lost a visionary and creative genius, and the world has lost an amazing human being. Those of us who have been fortunate enough to know and work with Steve have lost a dear friend and an inspiring mentor. Steve leaves behind a company that only he could have built, and his spirit will forever be the foundation of Apple.
That's our website.
If you'd like to share your thoughts, memories and condolences, please email rememberingsteve@apple.com.
Nice.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Thank you, TD, for this suggestion. The application of the week is an iPhone app, Mobile Destination Alerts. Now, I like this because I could relate directly to this. Have you ever fallen asleep on a train or a tram and missed your stop?
Brian?
It's happened to me more than once, I've got to say.
Really? I was watching Brian on Glimpse one day coming into the office, and he went past the local Hawthorne railway station.
And you went?
He's heading to Camberwell.
Did you ring him to wake him up?
No, he rang me and said, "Oh my God, I've fallen asleep."
My tram stop used to be the terminus. That was really easy.
Did you ever find that the tram turned around and started going back again and you were still on it?
No.
That's happened to me. Ever woken up in the middle of the the rail yard somewhere in the middle of the night?
Oh.
I'm sure I'm not alone.
No. Andy B might have been a driver.
A new iPhone app, hi Andy, released that wakes up napping commuters when they're approaching their stop. The Mobile Destination Alert allows people travelling on buses, trains, cars, other modes of transport to plug in the distance from their destination that they want to receive a notification or alarm. So the app uses the iPhone's location-based services technology to give you the heads up via a vibration or music that you're about to reach your destination.
Or a taser jab.
I thought this was really clever. Developed by a Sydney-based app creator who, quote, used to always just take a nap and miss my station. The developer said the app was different from an alarm because this worked on the basis of your distance or your location rather than time. So, for example, you say, 500 metres before I get here, I want you to vibrate or ring a tone in my ear. Let me know. Free to download this month through iTunes. Andrew, the app of the week is Mobile Destination Alert.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ah, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, GD, for this suggestion. The app was from TD. The Odd Spot's from GD. Queensland in recent times has dealt with floods, a cyclone, bushfires, even a couple of earthquakes. But now the police service says Queenslanders should prepare for a possible zombie attack.
What do you mean possible? It's a surefire thing, isn't it, up there in Queensland?
The Saturday just gone was World Zombie Day, and police marked the occasion by testing a new disaster information website by helping Queenslanders survive a possible zombie attack. So they used a possible zombie attack as a as a the scenario.
Didn't we have an app the other week about zombies running and yet you were being chased by a zombie or something like that?
That was at our lunch with at the, you know, boozer when we were looking at apps on the phones.
Oh, is that where that was?
Yeah, it was going to be for next week. But that's
sorry.
That's okay. Deputy Commissioner Ross Barnett said the aim is to get as many people as possible to visit the website in one day to replicate the web traffic that would be experienced during a real disaster. The more people that do that, the more we'll be able to test the ability of our website to withstand intense pressure. He told reporters in Brisbane, the site would be a one-stop shop for public safety information during a disaster. The real World Zombie Day, of course, is a day when all fans of zombie culture join together in an international effort to alleviate world hunger.
Excellent.
At the Real World Zombie Day walks, participating living dead are encouraged to bring a non-perishable food item for donation to local food banks.
Well done. Thank you, Dr. Ron. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Cisco, for staying up so late in the United States. I think it's about 4 a.m. over there for him. Well done, that man. That's our first post-jobs edition. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back same time next week on the radio station that you're currently listening to. It's been wonderful. Don't forget, send us emails, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Keeps Dr. Ron busy during the course of the week. And visit the website. Everything's there. Podcast there. Listen to the car park. Till next week, guys. See you then. Bye.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the 2-hour version or access the 1-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.